Hello and welcome to the 32nd episode of the Adoption and Fostering Podcast. Christmas is gone and the new year is upon us. Hello,
Yay!
Scott.
Yay!
Well, it's not gone, is it? We're pretending because it's actually not even Christmas yet.
No, it's not, is it? We've still got another 2 days to go anyway. Let's not spoil that for everybody because they've gone past it.
The magic.
Yeah. But we are in the run-up, but by the time this goes out, it will be all done and dusted.
So are you all ready for it, though? Let's pause
let's just
our
pretend it is, yeah.
Are you all ready?
No. Nowhere near.
Excellent.
Never am. I've had probably the worst run-up to Christmas I've ever had. I don't know why. I can't answer the question. As you know, I've changed my name on Twitter to Bah Humbug.
You miserable toad.
Yeah, and I just do not know. I do know. I've kind of pinned down a couple of things this last couple of weeks as to why I'm just not feeling this year. And I think that one of the reasons is that I think we do tend to forget just every year how difficult Christmas can be. Because I always get through Christmas and think, oh yeah, that wasn't quite as bad.
As you anticipated.
Yeah, but in the run-up, with all the, because you're still working, still parenting, still doing all the bits, sorting out all the rubbish that goes on with that.
The amount of times people get ill at Christmas, it's like you keep it together till that moment when you stop working, and then it just blah.
Exactly, and that's exactly where I'm at today. I've got the snots today, and hopefully it's not anything too bad. But it's that time of year. It's that run up, and everybody's reaction to the anticipation of Father Christmas. And I've read a lot more about it this year on Twitter as well. So people, it's just really difficult for the kids. Yeah. And I think that in turn makes it difficult for the adults. However, in October next year, I'll probably be forgetting what happened.
10 months later, it'll all be forgotten. Yeah. I have to confess, firstly, we're recording this and there's a house full of kids right now. They might end up screaming, so if you hear screaming, it's fine.
Yeah, and nobody's hurt or injured.
No one's being harmed. It's just a normal hooing and hawing of my family. But do you know what? I find this, I think you're right that there's a greater awareness, and I see people addressing it really head on. I think I've seen before, but for the first time, there's people are kind of giving action plans. This is what I'm going to do. This is how I'm doing it. I have to confess, though, we've never had any problems at Christmas other than the normal busyness of having 6 children.
Yeah.
Said like a true husband who doesn't.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, exactly. Because I'm sure that, Paula would disagree with you on that one.
Other opinions are available.
As are other husbands.
Yeah. I think a lot of people talk about, there's the busyness of Christmas, which is one thing.
Yeah.
It's just the amount of work in eating, feeding, preparing, all of that. But actually, for my children, there's no triggers. There's nothing that I know of other than the excitement, which can in and of itself be quite stimulating. That's a nice way of putting it.
And I guess as well, because for some reason, Jacob's school finished last Friday.
Oh, silly people.
So that's been a week already.
So he's just been watching the time pass. Yeah.
And of course, I'm still at work. Well, I'm still at work until today. So poor Tris, bless him. I had to give him a night off last night where he went and saw his mum and stayed over because he's done.
He stayed with his mum. That's
crazy. Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Sleepover at his mum's.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. Tucked him in and everything. And he will listen to this and he'll kill me for saying that. But even just that one week thing, and and here he comes, talk of the devil. It's all there.
Yeah, I mean, I can remember being little on it, and that excitement of waiting for Christmas was just too much to bear. And if you add in all the other sensory kind of emotional vulnerabilities, it's just way too much.
It is far too much.
But it's upon us, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And all I can say is thank the Lord for melatonin.
Your friend, my friend, everybody's friend.
And Jacob's friend as well, who's just appeared on my shoulder. You, listeners can't see him, but he is there. And that's probably the quietest he's ever been in his life.
Bless him.
Do you want to say hello?
Yeah, go on. Hello.
Hiya, Jacob. You okay? Excellent. You're looking forward to Christmas?
Yeah.
Good.
One more dancers.
One more dancers. Do you know what you're going to get for Christmas? Have you asked for something?
Yeah. A couple of things, about 11 things.
A couple 11 things. Can you tell me them, or do you want to keep that a secret? Are you keeping that between you and Santa?
Oh, that one of them's a Nike tracksuit.
Wow.
Another one, I think, was some art canvases.
Excellent.
School shoes. You've asked for school shoes.
Oh yes, and socks.
And school socks. I don't know what that's about. You know. Yeah, that's what I thought as well. We did strike those off the list before it went in the post to Father Christmas, of course, because you know I would never insist that my children put anything to do with school on their Christmas list. I think that's a little bit unfair, but you know,
if they want to put it on, they want to put it on. That's up to them, isn't it?
Yeah. Practical. Anyway, say goodbye to the listeners, Jacob.
Bye.
There he was, gone.
Yeah, and he's gone. He's gone to bed.
Excellent.
Well, he can't resist but make a little bit of a noise, you know, on the way.
Well, I can confess that Peanut has asked for, I said, what do you want for Christmas? And she said, cardboard. And I said, anything else? She went, lots of cardboard. So we've basically, we've been hunting around the back of the shops. You know,
oh my God. Do you know what? She is the most hilarious child I've ever met in my life. I just love her. She's so down to earth.
So we thought, well, why would we buy anything else for her? I mean, we've got some pens and we've got a stapler, which in our house, if you've got a stapler, you know, in the land of paper, the woman with the stapler is queen. So she's got a stapler and pens and all kinds of stuff. And so we just got, and we thought, well, actually, this expectancy that we need to spend money, we've got friends who spend. Like they, oh, we've got to spend £300. We go, well, no,
yeah,
well, you've got to. So they give their kids a catalogue, and I think if you give your kids a catalogue, they're going to just pick tat. So okay. She wants cardboard, so she will get cardboard.
She'll get cardboard
and some pens.
Quite right.
Spend £30 and happy.
And that's the thing, isn't it? Because there's a big, I think definitely in adoption world, there's that risk of trying to make up for the past, especially when it comes to Christmas. And I think we were always guilty of it with the older two. And it's not that they, you know, there was no big computers or iPads or iMacs or stuff like that, but generally what they asked for, they got.
Yeah.
And I think that we've definitely learned with a third not to be like that, because actually it's just not the way forward. And, you know, you can't make up for that. You cannot do it.
No, and I think that's human nature, isn't it? That, you know, especially in your, if you're thinking about having children, and you're coming towards Christmas and it's your first Christmas, then that's understandably, you want to make it into a special thing. I remember our first Christmas, and because we had three children in one, big deal, and there was it coincided with the BBC programme, so literally the whole northeast knew we'd adopted children, and we were given enough selection boxes that the week before Easter, I said to my children, you've all got five selection boxes left, right? We've been working our way through it. I said, you've got five, the children are killing themselves. And they got five selection boxes. Yeah. I said, right, the week before, you can eat whatever you want, whenever you want. We've just got to get through it. And then the same happened at Easter, and they sent as much. I'm going to go and shut those kids up. Just a second.
Anyway.
Anywho, I think it has been a really interesting year in the adoption landscape. We're coming up to the new year, and my mind kind of, you just can't help it, but I kind of have been thinking about what's happened this year, thinking to the year ahead. Mm. So, Scott the Adopter, what do you want to see in the adoption community in the year ahead? Also, as a part of your job, which is, and I don't know, you don't like to merge the streams, but what are you hoping for next year?
Well, it's funny, because this last week I've been thinking about that quite a lot. And I think personally, I would like a harmonious house. Yeah, I know. The humour in that, just that actual thought. And I'm not joking either. I would love just for one day. It'd be lovely. But I think when I think outside of my house, And I have been thinking about that a lot this week. I think that obviously the last 3 years I've focused on one thing. Well, my main priority of work has been Adopt a Voice, and just well, I'm going to say anyway. I probably shouldn't, but the last couple of weeks we've been putting together our impact report for Adopt a Voice for the last 3 years, and that impact report and the outputs and all the kind of stuff that's come out of that has just made me realise just what an important piece it's played. Mm-hmm. And maybe not quite with the national picture as much as we, you know, we would like. And what I mean by we is the whole community, but certainly locally, some of the work we've been doing directly has just made such a massive impact to the majority of families. And obviously that's potentially, the funding for that for the DfE ends in March. And I think that there's a risk of us not having that access if it just disappears into thin air. I mean, I'm not, obviously keen not to let it happen, and we'll do what we can. But yeah, it's a funny old time. But that would be my one hope for next year, is that, people see the value, and that is an independent thing. Whether it's, it doesn't have to be, I'm not just referring to Adoption UK, I'm talking to any engagement with adopters where, you're looking to develop services, etc.
It's interesting you say that, because I've always thought that any service that is being provided, to have those people who use the service involved is essential. You can't not. And the landscape on that has changed dramatically, and it's this year seems to have been maybe, I don't know whether you'd agree, but a moment where actually I see lots of people involved. I see that in on social media, lots of people who feel like they're having input, and it's not necessarily through the program you're running, but
no,
there's other places as well. Obviously, you've got, and I know you're not, you're not precious, you're not, you, but we all want to see that we're doing something for good. We're all helping. We're all kind of, there's lots of really good people out there who are bothered, and they're not just kind of banging the drum for their own kids there.
No, exactly. Yeah. And I just think that the way, things like, or services like Adopt a Voice, where it's not bangy fish, shouty voices, placards, that's the access point for this change that we want to see. And, you and I have talked about this at length before, and we know that it won't happen overnight, and we're not going to change everything, and other people have got different priorities, et cetera, et cetera. So it's really hard to balance that, isn't it? It is, massively. But if we've got an access point, then we need to use it, and we need to use it well. And there's no point in kind of upsetting people by, bashing them over the head with a stick.
So when that's you can actually...
So that's my
aspiration. What about
my simpleton aspiring?
That's a pretty good one, right? That's last year. What's been the high point and the low point?
Oh God, I'll think about the high point. The high point for me was definitely the conference.
I think that's. I mean, a lot of people, there's so much good feedback.
I just wanted to develop it into something that actually there was very little negative said about it, and that was true of the conference itself. Yes, you got the usual kind of, oh, the room was too warm, the room was too cold. But actually, the content, flow, the stickers.
Like the colour of the stickers.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. down to basic things like, the lanyards and all that kind of stuff. It was such a lot of hard work, but Sue keeps on calling it the barnstormer. It was a barnstormer for us, because it really kind of increased our awareness of us as an organization.
Yeah.
And I really didn't expect it to be that successful. I wanted it to be successful in the room, of course I did, because I wanted the 420 people there to enjoy themselves and to think actually that was money well spent. But actually outside that room, it just went mental. And we had our wash up meeting last week, and the plans for next year.
You only washed up last week?
Yeah. Filthy, isn't it?
Yeah.
But the plans for next year, well, I can't say any more about that, but the plans for next year, it's going to be
as good, even if not better.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What was the low point for the year then? Can I ask you if that is that too personal? Are you gonna
No, I don't think it
break
is.
Break you on, live on the podcast.
No, I think I think I'd struggle to pick out one specific low point. I've got to be honest, but I think all the low points for me have obviously been times with my kids. I think probably
that's telling, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's not their fault. It's just the way it's happened, and it's
doesn't make you love them any less.
No, definitely not. And I got into a little bit of a conversation, but I didn't follow through on it with Twitter about something that I'd said, or the way I'd said something on Twitter the other day. And it wasn't meant to sound like I was bashing my children. Sometimes you just say things and you don't really think about how you word them, don't you?
We're all human.
But, you know, they're all still here, and I still love them all, and I'll still love them this time next year, and you know, we'll probably still have similar frustrations same time next year, but you know, that's parenting as well as adoptive parenting.
Yeah, that's just, you know, it just goes on, doesn't it? It's just never stops. You'll be a parent till the day you die.
So what's been your highest point this year?
I'm cranking.
Or your lowest. Or your lowest, if you can think of your lowest first.
Well, a top low. Working down from a high 10.
Oh, yeah, if I'd known we were going to do this, I'd have done top 20, you know, mate.
I mean, I started the conversation, but I haven't even thought. Do you know, my lowest point was I got a kicking on Facebook, on social media.
Oh, yes.
And that actually really affected me. And then
I remember it. I remember it well.
It was really odd. And it just caught a moment. Over nothing, really. I mean, it just, it's all stuff with the kids, and I've had some quite epically mad moments. Yeah, but so that was really interesting, and it made me really think about where I position myself. Well, that sounds really conniving and manipulative, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Thank you. But it just made me wonder where I fit in the landscape, because I'm not this and I'm not that, and am I an adopter anymore, or am I a what am I? Am I a social worker anymore? And it feels like that's really caught up with me this year, because I don't know I sit anymore. For the first time, I've been writing blogs, always writing blogs, obviously, but for the first time, the last few months, I've really sort of sat down and go, I don't know where to pitch this anymore, because I'm not sure if I say this, does that reflect on me as a bad social worker? And if I say this, does it reflect on me as a bad parent? And I kind of, it's that confidentiality and that boundaries have really blurred. And, you know, boundaries are a really key issue as a professional. And it's made me think, you know, if I say all this about me being a parent, how can I function as a professional? And if I say all this as me being a professional, how can I function as a parent? That's been the complicated. I think the funniest moment, and I was laughing with Paul, and it was all inspired by a drink that we had at my house. And my funniest moment was when we had that party at my house with you and a few other friends. And the next morning when you appeared from your hotel, and I've never seen anyone so hungover in my entire life.
Oh, thank you.
And Paula was almost weeping when she recounted the story to me earlier today. She was going, do you remember? Never seen anyone.
Was I that bad?
You were, it was just fantastic. We were in tears. You looked as though you had perhaps died.
Yeah,
but anyway, that weekend was actually a real high point for me, because I had so much fun.
Before you said that, I was just thinking, actually, do you know what? Probably, yeah, that is one of the high points, actually. And that's the thing, isn't it? You know, we talk about peer support all the time, and, you know, the support that we get from each other. And in actual fact, that has stuck with me since it happened, actually, because I'm now so aware that actually we're quite alone in our little communities that we live in, you know, whether it's a town or a city or a village. And unless you've got people around you who go through this day in, day out. And not necessarily more so than anybody else, but I found today, because my mum visited today and I haven't seen her for quite a while, and she lives like an hour and a half away, but just life gets in the way sometimes, so I don't see her as often as I should. And when I was just recounting some of the stories, these things that we've been through lately, and her response to it, and she's not an adopter, she lives with an adoptee, her partner is adopted from many, many years ago, and has some kind of issues are related to that in terms of, you know, who she is and what have you. But anyway, but the point is that as a parent, my mum was going, wow, that's just not good enough. You know, they should not, you know, you're doing far too much for them. And I was like, do you know what? Actually, if you lived two streets away and I was able just to pop around for a cup of tea sometimes and just get that validation of, do you know what? You're a parent.
You're doing okay.
Yeah. But, you know, for us, we don't really have that around here. And we've got friends who've got children a similar age, but they're also going through the same thing. So I think when you're, you know, when you're all going through it together, you kind of, you're more focused on yourself than you are on maybe your friends or, you know, what they're going through. So you don't really get that. Well, I feel that you don't really get that sense of validation. And just listening to mom today, because I left home when I was 18 and my parents were separated and I'd lived with my dad for a couple of years. And I said to mom, I said, I don't remember being like that at that age. Mm-hmm. She said, no, because you'd left home. So you weren't like that. You were independent. You were living, you know, you were learning for yourself. You were making your own mistakes and whereas what these guys are doing is they're testing you to see if they were to move out or, you know, because we get that very quite often, I'm done with this house or this home or whatever. And then 5 minutes later, they're coming back to the door kind of thing. But it's testing you as parents to see. It's the adult test. You know, the child's test is you're not my mum, you're not my dad, you know, blah, 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 all that sort of stuff. To see how far they can push you till you say, right, you're going back kind of thing, you know. And that's black and white of it, isn't it? It's not quite as thingy as that. But and they're doing exactly the same as adults. They're making sure that they're still a part of the family. So we have to give them permission to go when it's time for them to go. Mm-hmm. We have to, you know, because otherwise this is what happens. They cause an argument. Well, this is what's happening in my house at the minute. Causing an argument to see how far they can push you before you say, right, get out of my house. Go and live somewhere else. And da-da-da-da-da. But then it's about, can I come back, actually, if it doesn't work out?
That's so it's really tricky. Really tricky. I mean,
It took for my mother to sit here and tell me, and just for us to chat it through, for me to work that one out. And that is exactly what's happened. It's an adult version of that, I'm going to push you to try and see if this is still my home, if I moved out. And that's not to say that that was going to happen soon, because it's not. But you know, we're just—it's the same message, isn't it? Well, you know, when you're ready to go, you go, and you know, but you'll still come back for your dinner, and you know, if you don't have a wash, exactly. Well, no, it's not actually. It will be locked. Can I just be clear?
The locksmith's coming on 10 minutes after you arrive.
Yeah, because I don't really fancy coming home of an evening with my, you know, planned champagne in the fridge and my lobster and it all being gone, you know.
just a normal weeknight tea for you. And
exactly. It's a Monday night for me. Better. Monday night.
Be for professional. That's really interesting because I think that, again, amidst all of the young teen stuff that's gone on, which is kind of almost inevitable and predictable and anticipated, just the unusual stuff with young adults, that is pushing buttons and you find yourself on ground, you know, issues around capacity. And I'm not an expert on capacity by a long chalk. I did it at university, you know, 5 years ago when I did my law element. So I understand it on the most rudimentary terms, but really nuanced conversations are out for me thinking, I'm not sure you've got capacity, but you clearly have got capacity. Mm-hmm. And I see the 6-year-old and everyone else sees the young adult. And we've had a week of it. You know, I raked around the northeast this week. My employer's very empathic and compassionate. And at one point I found myself in the court where I adopted one of my children. I found myself back there. Before the judge, with me sat in the gallery, kind of seeing all of the stuff that unfolded, really complex emotions, and I kind of came out there going, whoa, you know, this is not what I anticipated, you know.
Yeah.
And so that's complicated conversations, aren't they, to have?
It is complicated, and I think the other thing as well is that, you know, there comes a point where you think, we move past that, you know, but then it pops itself up again, doesn't it? And I think that's the frustration as a parent, because we think, well, it didn't take us long to work that one out when we were 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24.
Well, probably like you, my parents said to me when I got to 16, they went, how did your GCSEs go? And I went, oh, they went all right. They went, champion, get yourself a job.
Exactly.
I did.
Yeah.
And I never asked them for another thing. I mean, they didn't. Yeah. Not that I didn't give. You know, it was appropriate, yeah. But that was it.
And as long as you handed that housekeeping over on a Friday, then, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No questions asked. Not even, you know. So. You know, and I got up to no good, but I got myself out of it as well.
I don't disbelieve that for 1 minute. No,
I remember I got my wages on a Thursday and I spent every last penny of it other than my housekeeping on a guitar. And it just lived off, I don't know what I did for the rest of the month.
Oh,
for 5 weeks,
mine's,
I did nothing.
Well, yeah, mine's was pizza and chocolate fudge cakes on a Thursday night when I got paid. I used to go and buy a big chocolate fudge cake and two pizzas every Thursday night once I got paid.
And you ate them all in one go?
I did. I used to eat them all in one go, and then I'd go home, and then I'd pay my housekeeping to my dad, and then the rest of the week it would go on petrol and,
yeah,
you know, whatever else kind of thing. But yeah, that was my ritual, and I see that in, you know, my children as well. You know, as soon as you get paid, what do? You go out and buy some because you're skint, because you've spent it all by Tuesday kind of thing. So
yeah. I mean, the world's changed as well. Debt is something, you know, I didn't have a debit card till I was 24. You know,
no.
So you had to go and get cash out of the wall. So the world has changed, and I guess our children, it's not as safe in many ways, is it?
No, definitely not.
I've got friends and my own children who've got amazing capacity to find debt, but amazing incapacity to pay back debt.
Yeah, I've just gone through that this week with a £4 pair of shorts from a website. You know, is it the reminder and constantly falling out and arguing with them about actually you have to pay that by a certain date? I don't know the solution.
I think it's really complex because I think the vulnerabilities of some of our children, not all, because that's not my experience across all of my children.
No.
In fact, it's very varied. I think like last week I said I've got a third. I see that some are able to do it really well, but actually some of those hang-ups, those shadows in the dark corners, just... there's no amount of light will seem to, you know, reveal what's really going on in there. So it's really complex. We seem to have gone to a dark corner.
Oh, we've gone very dark, haven't we? But on the flip side of that, though, my other son today got his first pay in a year because he's obviously been doing a job for the last week, and I'm disappointed with the amount.
But 18-year-old
isn't. But was very logical in the way he said, right, okay, so I need to buy this, I need to buy that, I need to buy that. But very strict on himself as well, even to the point where he's going on holiday next week and he's still going to have money left by the time he goes away on holiday.
Well, that warms the heart.
So, and the complete opposites. Fabulous. So we've got two sides of the coin. Anyway, sorry, hey, listeners.
So
sorry,
we've got an interview with young... Blair, me lad, adoptee, foster carer, social worker, runner.
All-rounder, really?
All-rounder. Good guy.
All-rounder.
A bit of a thespian as well.
A thespian?
He's a bit of a thespian as well. And he was chatting through some of the stuff that they get up to as foster carers over Christmas and some of the stuff, and kind of reflecting a little bit on the impacts on some adoptees and stuff, you know. So it was a really interesting chat, and it's always good to chat to Blair because I think he's got some... he's got personal insights, and I know for them as a family, they are. If I had my children to go anywhere, I would put them there because I could.
Yeah.
You know, they've got this community of foster children that they just seem to keep.
Yeah.
You know, he was talking about one of his, you know, foster son who's 27 now, and he still comes round and
all that.
So we'll listen to that, and I hope you have a fantastic New Year.
Yes, and you. I'm not going to be in the country for New Year, so
of course
that's
not.
Even more fabulous.
I will be incredibly in the country because my life is humdrum and mundane. I'll be.
Listen, next year, if Mrs. C has her way, you're going to be tripping the light fantastic with us at some point. So
really,
you know.
I did not know that. She schemes and plots without me.
We have lots of private conversations, actually.
Suddenly it all became clear. I'll have to go and check her phone record.
Yeah, you will. Yeah, yeah. You'll have to download her Facebook chats.
Oh, cracky. Oh, you've made me go pale. I can't feel my legs. The thought of you two conniving against me is quite scary. Anyway, have a fantastic New Year and look after yourself. And here's the interview with young Blair.
Happy New Year. Happy New Year. Year.
Well, today I'm speaking to Blair Mortimer. How are you, Blair?
Yeah, good. Thank you.
It's just before Christmas. I'm not sure when the podcast goes out. It might go out between Christmas and New Year, or maybe after Christmas.
Okay.
I'm not sure, but
we'll talk. Oh, partial present tense. Oh.
Yeah, yeah. That's going to mess with your head, isn't it?
We'll just talk as we are, and people will get it.
Yeah, people are bright, aren't they?
Of course.
Sure they are. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. It's that end of the year where actually I really look forward to the end of the year, because the start of a new year is good for me. Because I think can't possibly be as hard as the last one. by March, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is really difficult.
It's much
again.
Worse. Much worse.
But anyway, no, but I like New Year's. So cool. I am hanging on.
Good. Hanging on.
Last few days. I like Christmas.
I know you have a really busy Christmas, don't you? I was talking to you earlier. We had a dinner at your house, which was very kind, and a glass of wine. I mean, drinking wine,
indeed,
which is not like me.
Doing now. Yeah,
yeah, I think the last glass of wine I had was maybe 2 or 3 years ago. But what I was thinking about was that you're a foster care, aren't you?
Yes, still.
Still. Your registration went through again.
Another annual review over, and we did well.
You did well.
Yes,
yes. Emma was telling me all about it.
Yeah.
So, what does fostering look like in your house?
At the moment, Chris. Well, it's been a busy year actually, and we've still got Little Princess, who is 22 months old, and this will be her first, second Christmas.
Maths is clearly not your strong. I think we would have to say that it'd be a second Christmas.
Second Christmas, yeah. Time goes.
It's been a long year, hasn't
actually, I've got a lovely picture of her in front of the tree for a life story work. But it is, well, it's bittersweet because she now has an adoptive mummy who's now been identified. So I'm sure we'll come back to this, but we're in the beginning of preparing her for transition. So we've got that this Christmas. But this year's been busy. We've had a number of placements. We've got two young people that we looked after a very long time ago who come back every year at Christmas.
Right.
So we've,
How long's a very long time ago?
Oh, well, they're both. Well, one's now 20, almost 21, and one is 26. So, one we looked after
a long time
ago, and then the young lady who we love dearly, her placement ended with us when she was 16 and a half, and we've supported her ever since. It ended really badly. In that she self-sabotaged the placement because she believed that she was going to get something else, right, like her own place, trying to explain that doesn't exist, but she's gone through some very, very difficult years, but stayed very much a part of our family, which is amazing. But Christmas is not a good time of the year.
I mean, I can imagine why, for her particularly, or is it that just generally, do you think?
I was really thinking, actually, as we're approaching Christmas, I love the romance of Christmas. I love the music and just the shops and the fact that everyone gets excited.
Yeah, frosted windows.
And the frosted
shebang.
Windows. And I feel like I just want to put fake snow on my windows. And I really do, because I used to do that when I was a kid. And memories. But I realise that Christmas is really tough, like for a lot of people, you know, just generally.
In general, yeah.
I think it's difficult. It's, you know, there's expense behind it, there's expectations, there's... but I think for looked after children, possibly veering into adoption, I don't know, but definitely for looked after children, it's a really difficult time. And this young lady, every single year, has an absolute crisis. So we're in the middle of crisis at the moment. At the moment, she is not coming because she doesn't want to ruin our Christmas. This is synonymous of last year and the year before. So we're sort of holding her, and we hope she will come. But it has to be led by her. We can't make her do something that she is saying she doesn't want to do. And so But it will be okay. It will be okay. It will be fine. I think it's just helpful to know that it's not an easy time really for a lot of people. And I think, I just want to be mindful of that because I just like to be sensitive when I'm talking to people about Christmas. Instead of, isn't it going to be great? How is it going to be for you?
Yeah, that expectation, and all the TV is just full of adverts of people having a lovely time. These model families having a lovely time, and everything, you know, these cute animals are having a lovely time. Everything is just this. It's almost a myth because I don't think very few people have this idyllic time, do they? Families at the best of times.
I think we put on a good show, don't we? And I think sometimes that's needed. I think sometimes we just need to get up out of ourselves and make an effort. Sorry about that. That's my computer. But I don't want to take anything away from the fact that, do you know what? It's not great for some people. So
I've just had a question come in. I'll just look at that because I just put out a little tweet before
so quick.
It's literally interactive. Some sort of voodoo magic. I don't quite understand. Someone asking, hang on, pressing buttons, try not to turn anything off. This is from Glitter Nail saying, what would be the one piece of advice you would give to adopters from his experience as an adoptee, foster carer or social worker? And I think that is maybe around supporting children, because I think a lot of adopters' experiences of almost a sensory overload. If you've got sensory issues or you've got the emotional ties, what advice would you give to people who are looking after perhaps younger children who are adopted or foster or in foster care?
Towards Christmas?
This time of year. Hasn't it?
I think part of me wants to go down the route of the theatre of Christmas and just encouraging as much positivity around Christmas as possible. And particularly, I think, with younger children, because I think Christmas is, for many children, whether they believe or not in Santa Claus and whether that's why, there is this element around something positive. And I don't think there's anything wrong with making it a positive time. And I think we need to make an effort to make Christmas a positive time. My wife's parents were amazing. They separated when she was, a young teenager. But they always made a point of Christmas being together. And I think that there's an element of whatever's happening, we should try and create a good opportunity, a good
and even if it doesn't necessarily look like that stereotype of mum, dad, two kids, Labrador.
Because it's all different. Families. What does there is no stereotype. There's no model, is there? But going back to the question, I think let's not dwell on the fact that it could be difficult. It probably is difficult for them. Let's create something that is as close to ideal as possible, being aware that behaviours might spike, that they may emotionally just be off the scale or even just withdrawn. And I suppose approach it. So as a foster carer, we approach certain times of the year, birthdays, contacts, with the knowledge that this may all go badly, like this Pete song or whatever. I'm trying to think of
a nice way.
Whatever. We know that this could be a road crash in terms of.
So is that about you preparing yourself, not necessarily the child, but
no, it's preparing ourselves to be able to anticipate and have a strategy for how are we going to support this young person? And maybe we won't need it because maybe it will be okay.
Yeah, expecting expected and the expected.
Yeah, but I think the reason I think I make that point is because I think the worst position to be in is where you weren't expecting it and then you react. Actually you double punish because that's a very harsh word. I don't
think
to,
no, I think that's
but reflects... what you do is your reaction to children's behaviours around difficult times.
Come out of that place of your own disappointment. Yeah, you know, we were gonna have a lovely afternoon.
The target's worrying.
Yeah, since the day we imagined having children, we were gonna play Monopoly on Christmas afternoon, and you've eaten the board.
Yeah, exactly.
And now you've got
a stomachache.
Yeah, now I have to go to A&E.
So, I had no idea if that answered your question. But listen to it again.
It's only great emails.
There'll be a thread of something there that will help.
Coherent. Can I ask you about your experience, because you're an adoptee, and I know you kind of link into a network of adoptees, don't you, as well? And was it ever, for you, a kind of a time of reflection on you know, maybe where are those people in my family? I know you've got your own road.
It's funny because, for me, I think I spoke about my adoption before. I was sort of, blissfully ignorant, really, growing up to anything that might have brought me down, really, in terms of feelings of loss or anything. I didn't have any...
No curiosity.
Curiosities growing up. I suppose all my curiosities were satisfied in as much as I knew that if I wanted to ask, I could, and I just didn't feel the need to. So I think growing up, but I think nowadays it's very different because... I think with the adopted adults that I work with in the adopted adults support group, generally I think there's a mixed experience of people that have not had positive adoptions experiences.
Right.
And so their childhood is marked by feeling different, being different, not fitting in, and maybe because as an adult now they still have difficulties and struggles,
the shadows
it probably amplifies maybe what they thought that they were feeling as children.
So for some of those adults, is Christmas, is that a challenge for
them? And I think that's probably because we've just had our sort of last meet together before Christmas, and
I don't want you to share anything about that. They would, if any listen, and they kind of go, he's reporting back.
Honestly, within the group there's this kind of open agreement that actually, I mean, because it's attended by social workers who facilitate the group, but the idea of this group is very much about allowing our stories and our feelings and what we are experiencing to be fed back into modern day.
Sort of practice and understanding.
If that's possible. And I know it's very different now, but what threads, what themes, so absolutely fine. But what I would say is that there is a general acknowledgement that actually this isn't a great time for everybody, but that doesn't mark the conversation. It's we know that now we're going to look at the positives. Now we're going to talk about what Christmas is going to be for us and what we're going to do and how much time we've got off and where we're going. But I think that acknowledgement that it's not, you know, it can be a bit of a difficult time, allows us just to be positive and not just.
But I mean, you kind of are at the fore of that group, and your nature is very positive, isn't it? Is that you being a social, putting your social work head on, and you know that positive spin on stuff, or is that just your nature?
No, I think it's just I'm blissfully just ignorant. what's going on around me? I am positive. I had a relatively positive experience growing up in that it was just normal for me. Parents split up.
Is that your character?
I think so, definitely.
Kind of person.
Yeah, and I've always wanted to do this kind of nature nurture kind of, you know, really look into that. At some point, I will. And I think it's a bit of both, but I think I'm lucky. I am positive, and I suppose if anyone was to ask why are you positive, I say, well, why not? Because I'd rather be positive.
That's a really positive answer, isn't it?
It's terrible, isn't it? Because someone who, you know, I'm not negative but on purpose. I am actually struggling with things in life, you know. So it sounds awful, doesn't it? I think I'm very fortunate. But you're kind of highlighting my point in that I would never want to come across as, you know, everything's just green and rosy.
Tickety-boo, yeah.
So we always say, really appreciate that this isn't a great time of year for everyone. And we just want to put that out there. Mm-hmm. So if people want to talk about that, let's do that. But also, it's the end of the year, it's a celebration of the year.
There's got to be more than that. I mean, I suppose you're sensitive to people and where they're at as well.
Yeah.
Well, I would hope you would be, you being a social worker, adoptee, foster
care. I hope
so,
yeah, when I'm working.
It's like, I've got my social work head on now. Yeah,
on a good day.
Yes.
For us, this Christmas will be a bit bittersweet as well, because it's Little Princess is last Christmas and with us, and we're in the middle of transitions, which is really interesting because you would have seen around the house.
Yeah,
pictures of Mummy.
I have seen pictures of Mummy. That's really interesting because I've been a little person's been showing me pictures of Mummy.
Oh, because she's learned the word Mummy. Sure, she's reassociated the word Mummy now because she hasn't used it for a while.
Right.
She used to use Mum. Well, she, obviously her birth mum, mm-hmm. who she had contact with, was obviously Mummy or Mum. But last contact ended a couple of months ago. A while ago actually now. So she hasn't associated that word for a while.
But I don't particularly want to draw you onto the rocks of talking about her, because I think that's quite confidential. It's not quite confidential. That's not how you measure things, is it, in confidentiality terms. But I would be interested to know how your anxieties about the few coming months I'm kind of really consciously steering clear of.
Her story.
The adopt UD, because
yes,
I think that's that, and I don't want to draw us onto the rocks of that.
If anyone's interested, the process is about making her as comfortable with the change that's coming up as possible.
Yeah.
Which is what our job is at the moment. So for us, we have a role to play, but we are...
But you're not robots.
No, but we are very aware. Like sometimes I'll talk about it, and I will just find myself getting upset. There's we attach as when you're looking after babies, you attach completely. But in terms of nature, there's some that you attach to in different ways, and so for instance,
it's just human.
Little Princess, I'm going to be absolutely devastated, but. It is equaled, and really, if not more so, by the fact that we have the opportunity to have someone who is going to be a mummy and have a family, and that's what it's all about.
Do people not say to you? I mean, I would imagine right at this time that people will be saying to you, "I couldn't do what you do because I could never give them away," which clearly is my position. I just take them all. It's a fine line between stupidity and willingness.
Yeah.
So that is the question. You came into this knowing, did you?
Well, we did, yeah. And I think we've continuously been knowing and reminded ourselves, this is what we do.
Because it's not just you. I mean, you've got your own children. You've got how many children?
Yeah. We've got... So I've got three children. And, it's really interesting, actually, just you're bringing me... Sunday we have a new life party, which is... when a child is moving on, we will always have a new life party. So it's not a goodbye, it's a celebration of new life, of the fact that, there is this next stage for this young person's life. But really, it's also about a big thank you to our support network. So we invite everyone that has been involved in the life of this little one.
Yeah,
and it's considerable amount of people, and they all get to write in the book, and the book goes with her.
I mean, that's a reflection of your life, isn't it? So, you've got a very, you are as a family, you're very open, and you're very involved in lots of elements of the community, and so by default, lots of people have been impacted by meeting this foster child,
this little one, and so. What is interesting, really playing on my mind...
I'm painting you as the ideal foster care, aren't I?
No. But what's interesting, and I want this to be heard, because I do feel, not guilty, but I'm just aware of this, is that we choose to do what we do. So we choose to foster, and we choose to take a baby, and we choose knowing that it will lead to... that young person moving on.
Mm-hmm.
Our network doesn't choose that. They have this, they make attachments to these young people.
That's really interesting, because I've spoken to someone in your network who's really upset.
Yeah.
Not upset, that's maybe the wrong way of putting it, but they were talking to me about, oh, we looked after this little girl.
Yeah.
We spent time with her. And that person was talking about how their children had spent, you know, in the summer they played in the park and in the, you know.
Yeah, and then would have taken her out or him out, yeah.
And everyone's really conscious of wanting positive things for her. She's totally immersed in your community, which is exactly what you want from foster care, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. Yeah. But it comes at a price, because the other side that I'm aware of is that hopefully, the adopter will allow us to remain in some way involved. But that's not. But the rest of the people that have built such an attachment to little Princess won't get that. So literally, we're bringing children into our network. We're expecting people to look after and support us and support the children. And then a year's time, they'll move on. And I'll tell you why this came about. And the reason I'm talking about this, Al, is you've got me going now, because on Sunday, I'm really consciously aware that it's about the people around us, because they never chose to form an attachment. Mm. But they celebrate in what's happening. They celebrate in it. But it was a couple of our friends' children who asked, will we ever see Little Princess?
Hmm.
And we had to say, probably not. Maybe not, I don't know. Yeah, and it was the fact that, you know, they're 9 and 10 and they've played such an integral role in her life for the first 2 years. And they did in, actually, her brother's life, who we had the pleasure of fostering 2 years ago, who went to adoption. Listeners, if this is sort of rambling on, but this is what's going on in my head at the moment. We choose to do this. Our network doesn't. It's really valuable. The children that we look after really benefit from it. But we need to acknowledge the fact that actually loss, you know, is bigger than just us. Because everyone focuses on us. Everyone says, oh, you know, it must be awful for you and I don't know how you do it. But actually, you know,
there's a lot of people who will...
A lot of people around us who
maybe
feel
not
it and don't talk about it.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, our mutual friend did.
Yeah. Exactly.
But you know who it is. You know, you'll know, yeah.
Yeah.
So, you shall not be named.
Desperately now trying to think of a positive spin on it.
I enjoy the negativity.
But yeah, so the party's going to be great, and it's a big thank you to everyone. And transitions, we're actually looking forward to it, working with the adopter.
Because it is,
and just making sure that is absolutely.
I think it is such a
brilliantly
source of
done
conversation
for her as well.
Yeah, on Twitter, you see that relationship between foster care and adopter is constantly come back to you. And it's, I know stories that would curl your hair of it going slightly awry.
Yeah.
And you know stories of where it's just not quite gone to plan.
Yeah.
Or, and sometimes where it's gone catastrophically against plan.
Sometimes about personalities as well. You're just not clicking. You're not, you know, it just seems like work. You're just working against each other, or it just doesn't flow. And I'm hearing stories like that, and I think we've been very fortunate, and it's going to be good.
I mean, you're very mindful of them as well. I think that you've got a very positive spin, and you bring a lot of things to the party that perhaps other foster carers don't. You know, you're a social worker, so you see that perspective. You're an adoptee, so you've got. You know, that you bring a lot to the party, but
And it might just be that foster carers just can't contain what they're feeling and what they're maybe we just contain it.
Well, I don't want to canonise adopters, because I think there's at times. The amount of times I've heard adopters who I can probably be more critical of, because I am one, sort of say, "Oh, the foster carers did this and they did that." And they did X and they did Y.
Yeah.
And then,
What did you do in that mix? Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that there's you've got sets of people with really who are managing complex emotions.
Yeah.
And I think that is just a recipe for disaster in any terms. And in the middle of all that, you've got little people. So
it's potentially a hothouse, isn't it? Of just emotions and just.
And the doctors have maybe worked for you. This is the culmination of some decades of hope.
Yeah.
I'm finally getting my baby, or my child, or my children, and that's a really complex dynamic. And then sometimes people, I know for me, I remember thinking, really complex, our first children, the big ones, who's marching full steam ahead, not really perceiving the impact on the foster carers. In the middle of all that, me in my head going, what have I done? This is a disaster. What have I done? I'm taking on three children.
Oh, wow.
Quickly, I kind of came to this thinking, oh, what am I doing? So I'm kind of putting on a front of, this is great. And inside I'm dying.
Yeah,
and there's this other person who's just so not even on my agenda. Their needs and how they might be feeling.
Yeah.
And so I look back now and I often reflect on that. So it's just probably the most complicated dynamic in the world.
I think the preparation on every part has moved forward so much as well. From all of this learning...
Yeah, that was the last century.
Well,
literally the last century.
Ago, yeah.
But it was 1998.
Yeah. I suppose 99. For us, the difficulty is our kids, because it does... My poor daughter, who I don't mind mentioning, because I admire her greatly. She's amazing. She's 19.
Yeah.
But, every single time it breaks her heart.
Mm.
And she's, she gets through it and she's got strength to draw upon and experience and previous, resilience to draw upon. But
still.
Yeah, so it's going to be difficult for all of us, but it's the right thing and it's going to be amazing at the end of it. But we're just, so we're a bittersweet Christmas coming up.
With a mix of some of the fostered, ex-foster care leavers.
Coming in, eating... Taking their presents and going, which is, that's fine. As long as they come. And if they don't come, then maybe we'll go to them at some point. So,
just turn up at their front door.
Make sure they're Christmas. Okay. Yeah, you can't get away from us.
That's wonderful. That's a great note to end on. Well, thank you very much, Blair. I hope you have a wonderful Christmas.
Yeah, and to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got a Christmas.
Because it's going to be a good one. We've already established that.
Hey, we're going to be like a Woolworths advert.
Yeah.
I'm showing my age.
Only because it's just come around on certain media platform.
Al,
it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
As always, great. Thank you. Look after yourself.